In our meeting this evening, I'll call the meeting. First, are there any citizen comments? Yes, sir. Okay.
Thanks.
Just state your name and address and.
How do you think of the meeting, Katie?
Go ahead.
Jack Rose, 4315 68th Street, Kenosha. I'm also the president of the National Alliance on Mental Illness here in Kenosha County. I'm here to talk about the human services budget. A little bit of background. NAMI, Kenosha County, is here to improve the quality of life for people that are affected with mental illness. We do this through education, support, and advocacy. We fight stigma, and we promote recovery. We're the mental health advocates. So it's all about mental health awareness, mental health treatment, mental health recovery. So locally here, we try to work on the mental health awareness. And we do this through many different programs. And it's so important over the last couple of years and into the future years because of the budget cuts that everybody's experiencing, whether it's at the federal level, state level, or the local level. The cost of not having mental health awareness is quite high for the community. What happens, and if the cuts are made, people who do not receive the services, who do not receive treatment, end up in hospitals, shelters, jail, homeless, or dead. We really need to avoid this in our community. What do we do for mental health awareness? We have programs. We have family-to-family programs, 12-week course, very effective. This last year, we reached out to the Hispanic community and had our first family-to-family in Spanish. This has been quite successful. We have a production called Pieces in My Own Mind, coming to Ruther Auditorium here on September 25th. This initially started in NAMI Greater Milwaukee as an outreach program to the African-American community. So we're trying to reach out within our community and really get the word out about mental health awareness. Mental illness is a medical illness. It touches one in four of us, one in four families. One in 17 adults lives with schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, or major depression. Mental illness affects Republicans, Democrats, independents. And it's really sad to have people not become aware of mental illness till it strikes a family member, a friend, or a loved one. Early identification and treatment is effective. You look at depression specifically as an example. Depression is one of the biggest causes of lost work in the United States. If depression is not treated, it can lead to suicide. However, with proper treatment, 85 to 90% of the people with depression have very productive lives. And I know one of these people who is very dear to my heart. And trust me, treatment works if you can get it. So we talk about the awareness piece. We talk about the treatment piece. And that's where I'm coming to you as we go through the human services budget. We have a great program here in Kenosha. We have the Care Center, the Community Support Program, the Comprehensive Community Service, the Crisis Center, the Jail Diversion Program, the Drug and Alcohol Court. And soon we'll get into, it sounds like, a mental health court, as well as a veterans court, because we have many veterans that are coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan that have severe mental health issues. We also must take a hard look at our children with mental illness. Can we do a better job for our kids with mental illness here in the county? The U.S. Department of Education indicates that greater than 50% of the students with mental illness will not graduate from high school. And we all know what the school budgets are this year and it's going to be a very difficult situation. So we all need to pull on the line together. We all need to work together to change attitudes and save lives. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Further citizen comments? All right, seeing none, we'll move on to the next item. I have no reports. Do any of the members of the committee have a report?
I will note that Youth and Governance Michele, she will not be here, or if she is, she'll be here late this evening. And I did have one thing on the sale of tax deed properties that I'll wait until number 7 to come out.
All right. Bill Grady also emailed in, as did John O'Day, as excused. Any other reports? All right, seeing none, we'll move on to the approval of the minutes, which you have.
Move to approve.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any additions or corrections? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Item number 6, the CABA second quarter report.
Good evening, everybody. You should have your second quarter revolving loan fund report in front of you. Just on the first page, the summary page, there are a couple items to note. The first couple of paragraphs talk about the business retention and expansion visits that CABA personnel continue to go out and do on a regular basis. When I get to the business retention report, you'll see that we've upped the total companies that we visited to 74 through the second quarter, and that those additional companies continue to make the report that we generate more detailed and a better snapshot of what's happening out in the businesses in our community. In the middle of that first page there, just a note that we continue to see some strong interest from companies outside of Wisconsin that are looking in Kenosha County for their potential expansion projects. We do see a lot of pickup in activity from that. Nothing that's kind of moving towards an end game, but we're getting a lot of calls from companies. And then the last couple of paragraphs there before the loan activity is just a note there that the Lakota Group is finishing up their downtown strategic study, and I think the plan is going to be ready and will be presented in front of the city's common council on August 20th. And then at the very last, the paragraph right before the loan activity, if any of the members of the committee here wanted additional information on how that is progressing or information just about the plan, there's a couple of links there that you could log into and get information on what's happening. From a loan activity standpoint, towards the end of May, our finance committee approved a $500,000 loan to a company that's called HandyRamp, and they produce material handling dock plates and dock ramps for distribution centers and material handling between trucks. It is an Illinois company that is expanding manufacturing operations, and they're going to be purchasing a business condominium out in the Business Park of Kenosha. And we're helping with their primary lender as well as the SBA to help finance the real estate and equipment that's put here in Kenosha. And then towards the end of June, we also approved a smaller loan for $180,000 for Platinum Systems. It was a loan for real estate. Their headquarters is now going to be on Green Bay Road. They were previously leasing that facility, but the owner in a bank sale wanted to purchase that, so now they've got a permanent home for their operations. On the second page, just a list of the loans that we've approved so far this year, you can see that we're just a little bit over $1 million. The next page after that is just a list of the companies that were interviewed as part of our business and retention visits during the second quarter. And then on the next three pages, it's the actual business retention expansion report. And as I had noted earlier, we're up to 74 companies now that we've been out and visited. That's obviously increased since we're past the quarter. At the bottom of that page, the business and activity and expansion section, this report is actually kind of focusing on the technology, the research and development, and other aspects of product innovation and development in our for the companies that are in our areas. That focus actually changes from report to report depending upon what's selected to be reported out. From a workforce standpoint, we continue to get very strong ratings still for the quality, stability, and productivity of our workers, which is a very good sign. And on the third page of the report, at the top, I just wanted to draw some attention that a lot of people were talking about the healthcare issue and the healthcare plan, the federal plan. And 60% of people who participated thus far think it's going to have an adverse effect on their business, as opposed to 28 who think it's going to actually be a positive for them. And then if we jump over to the first of the revolving loan fund and cash reports, the EBA revolving loan fund, you can see at the end of June, the bank balance there was about $790,000. And we had commitments outstanding of about $145,000. At the end of the day, once that loan funds, we have a balance available of about $642,000. The next page is just a list of all the borrowers that have a loan in the EBA fund, and I'm happy to report that there are no past dues as of June 30th. The next one is the County Revolving Loan Fund. That had a balance at the end of June of about $960,000, and we had commitments outstanding in June of about $665,000. So once those are fully dispersed, the balance in that account will be about $300,000. And again, the next page is just a list of the borrowers that have a loan with the County Revolving Loan Fund. And here again, I'm happy to report that there are no past dues. The CKC Fund, which is a consolidated revolving loan fund, has a balance of about $1.6 million at the end of June. And currently, we don't have any commitments outstanding for that revolving loan fund. And again, after that is a list of the borrowers, and again, no past dues. And the final one is the High Impact Loan Fund. We actually did our first funding out of that loan fund to Bradshaw Medical in the amount of $250,000, so that we had a balance at the end of June of about $750,000. And currently, we don't have anything in the pipeline where we would be looking to maybe tap that again. And then the last page, it was part of the agreement between CABA and the county to report out on an individual basis the specifics for each of those grants that were given. And there you can see that we closed that disbursement on May 29th for a 10-year term. Their measurement date started on May 29th, so they have 3 years, which puts them to 2015 to create the 50 jobs. You'll notice there's a couple blank spaces there. I won't know what those are until they meet the job requirements to know when we start the maintenance period, and I won't know what the payroll numbers are until we know how many people are hired and what their wages actually are. And then the last page is just showing that advance is outstanding and all that. I would be happy to answer any questions that anybody might have.
Questions, discussion?
Of the companies that, thank you, Mr. Chairman, of the companies that are approaching you, are you seeing more so some people from Illinois wanting to move here versus some startups from our own state, or is that what your influx is?
We've been seeing a lot of people calling from Illinois, and people who represent from a broker standpoint calling on behalf of companies, so we may not always know who the company is, but there have been some companies. The Handy Ramp, which I noted in the first part, was an Illinois company. They're going to keep part of their operations in Illinois, but they wanted to expand, and they actually selected Wisconsin as a better environment to do so. So they're moving one of their divisions up here to actually conduct manufacturing.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
All right, any further discussion? Questions? All right, seeing none, thank you very much.
Sure. And thank you.
See you next quarter.
Yep.
Moving on then to the next item of business, a resolution from the county clerk, sale of property.
Good evening, Chairman Rose, members of the Finance Committee. Before you is a resolution that I'm asking you to approve about a 10-foot by 350 strip of land that is in the village of Twin Lakes. This property abuts the current marina that the village owns. And this property would be beneficial to the residents of the village and the people that use this lake as an egress without any encumbrance. I have a letter attached to the resolution that was from David Cox, the city administrator, village administrator, who is now left. But he and I had talked about this before that he wanted to finalize it. But due to election schedules and other things going on, we weren't able to bring it before the board before he left. The village is willing to pay the past taxes, interest, and penalty on this property. Normally, in these cases, we just sell it for a dollar, but they are willing to pay the back taxes and interest on this property because they do want to have it and it will benefit the village. So I ask for your approval tonight. Do you have any questions?
Discussion? Mark?
Not specific to this property, but in general, I know the previous finance committee had questioned and talked with you about the disposition of any properties we may currently have or be holding on tax deed or for whatever reason. How many properties do we currently have?
Land or houses? I mean, land, we have a lot of land, but probably, I would say, anywhere with probably 400 parcels, but a lot of them are designated floodplains, unbuildable, unsellable. We have a list, I believe I submitted to the committee in the previous meetings, that gave a listing from the Department of Planning and Development and their recommendation and properties that can be sold. Currently, we have, I believe, 6 houses. We're still in the eviction process of one of them. The others are empty but not cleared out yet and ready for sale. We're working on getting our committees going out next week to look at some of the properties and assess them to see what we can bring them to the finance department and get our committee and get recommendations and approval for selling. We're hoping to sell them, the houses, and that by the end of this fall. We don't want to have them over the winter. We don't want the liability. The other properties we have is a acreage in Summers along 39th Avenue that we did have up for sale, but there was no bids on it. We can reassess that one and put it at a lower bid if the finance committee wants. And we have other properties that have high city specials on them because buildings were raised on them, houses were raised on them. And so those at this time have not been put up for sale, but those will be under discussion too with the finance committee.
Because I know some part of the discussion was with the election, the spring election, you wanted to wait until after that. And you know, I'm of the opinion that we should get these properties off of our books, back onto the tax roll. We should look at the best and most efficient way to do that and do it as expeditiously as we can.
Well, our goal is to have a sale in September. I mean, that's our goal, is to have these houses empty and ready to be viewed, and any properties that we have are available over the counter now that have already, every property that we have that hasn't been recommended to keep because of it being in floodplain or unbuildable, unsellable, have been put up for sale, but have never sold because they're probably parcels that have been in the city that were, they're just not in good areas that people want to buy. We did sell one property to an abutting property owner to expand their area so they have a bigger yard and they can build a garage or whatever.
Sure.
But most of the properties that we have, nobody wants to buy. The ones that we do have, that they usually sell. So a lot of these properties that we have are just kind of sitting there in limbo because they're just not conducive to people that want to put the money out and pay for it. I mean, unless you want to look at all of them and decide if you want to put them up extremely cheap. I mean, I had the city look at things. I had planning development look at them when I first came into office with a recommendation as to if we sold them, could we waive the specials? The city never got back to me on anything. So that was kind of a wash with that idea. But
well, if that's the case, then I think we should get an inventory of the properties before this committee so we can take a look at it. If we need to get the city to respond, let's push the issue.
Well, we do have an inventory of all the properties. We have an inventory of
the
properties.
I don't know what it is. I don't know if the rest
of it is. Well, we did submit it to the finance committee in the past. We had an inventory of a whole list of all the parcels, what their value was. So we did submit it, but that's as far as it was.
Well, then I'm asking that it be resubmitted again to this new finance committee under this current chairman.
I think that's a good idea. Do you have a list that you give to Xerox and circulate
we've got it electronic. I can email it to you, we can scan and file it, or we can give you hard copy, whatever you prefer. That's fine.
Why don't we include it in the next packet that goes out for the finance committee? Are there any of these properties, these many vacant gas stations in the community?
We don't have any, I believe, that are vacant gas stations.
All right.
We've never taken any properties that we thought were not environmentally. There are a couple of properties that are sitting there out in limbo where nobody has taken ownership of them. One of them is over by the Brass School, and that's there's like a parking lot, and they wanted us to take it, and we didn't for back taxes because there may be contamination in the grounds. So we didn't want to have to go through all the environmental cleanup.
Right.
I'm having trouble figuring how big this lot is. And the second question would be, someone obviously had
title to it, so we backdated it. What was it used for before?
Well, apparently the property owner to the east, I believe, was one of the people that, he had interest in this, he wanted to buy it. He wanted to take it over, but he wanted to block off any usage to the people of the village to use this. It's actually a 10-foot wide strip by 350 feet long, and it leads right down to water, and it's abutting the actual marina that the village owns. So it would extend the village marina. If you look at the map, you can see the size of the marina with that parcel would actually bring it up to the same size as the other parcels around it.
So someone had obviously...
It was owned by someone I don't know who, and I really don't know what the history of the property is.
Was it an abutting property owner that sold it without that?
No, I think it was just a parcel that someone owned, and they might have leased or used that as an egress to the lake to one of the other owners.
And I agree with Mark as far as getting a list of parcels. Do we have parcels in the city? And I can go back when I remember taking lots that were 45 feet by 45 feet and tax deeding them because they obviously tore the house down. And then the property owner that was abutting it, we turned it over to them. Do we have anything like that?
And we've looked through the properties, and we've actually sent letters out to abutting property owners asking them if they want to buy the property. We have had at least two people that have responded and bought the properties and added it to their parcel, and then we combine it and make it one parcel. So then it's back on the tax rolls, and it's not sitting there being maintained by the county.
Well, actually, the houses that I'm talking about, there was a house on it, but the person next door, the house got torn down. One house got torn down, and the person who had the lot next door, 45 by 45, they were building on lots like that years ago. Mm-hmm. So she just took over, and we tax-deeded it over to her.
No, we sold them. We didn't tax-deed them. We sold them.
Then what we did was, in order to get them back on the tax rolls, because they're not buildable, is what I'm saying, you give it to the property owner abutting it, and then they accept it as part of their lot, and then you get it back on the tax rolls. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's something we ought to see. Do we have any of those?
We do have some properties like that that are small parcels that they really don't want to spend the money on, but they may be willing to, if the county's willing to give it to them.
Well,
however, it's
going to sit there forever if we don't.
Right. But we've never explored that avenue, Supervisor Frederick. We actually called and sent out letters asking them if they were interested in buying the property. I didn't know that we would be able to.
Well, here's an example of the 45 by 45 lot. Was the person next door having the same size lot? You can't build on it, so it's going to sit there forever. Most of these lots that we're talking about, you probably can't build on them anyway because they don't conform, obviously.
I would be very willing to explore that option because right now we're paying to have that grass cut beside the
lot. Why don't you do that?
Absolutely.
Let's do that.
I mean, I can bring those. I can find those parcels and let you know how many there are of that size.
That'd be a good
idea.
And
you can decide as a committee if you want to explore that option.
All right, why don't we put that on the next agenda, Dave, and we'll take a look at that.
We'll probably have some recommendations for those other homes, too.
So. I'll move approval what's before us tonight.
All right. Is there a second?
Second.
All right. Further discussion on the resolution? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, we'll circulate that, and then we'll have that other item on the next agenda on the properties. Next item on the is 8 Public Works on acceptance of a grant.
Good evening, Chairman Rose and members of the Finance Committee. I'm Jim Pepper. I'm the CFO of Public Works. The resolution that you have before you is for the county to accept a grant of $150,000 from the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation to be used for the Pets Dam project. The 2012 budget called for a $520,000 budget for this project. Back in February, there was another resolution. We had another grant for $234,000. So we added there was a budget mod that went through for expense, adding an expense of $234,000 and income of $234,000. Now we have another grant that we're able to receive for $150,000. And the cost of the project right now is estimated to be, I think it's around $550,000. And by another resolution, any money that's left over from this project has to be used to go back to the Highway K project, which is another public works project. So we've been successful in getting two grants totaling $384,000 for this project. And we're asking for permission to receive this grant.
All right. Discussion?
Just a question. I've been ticked off because I have to take a different route through Pets on my bike in the morning. Why are we... That so clearly that project has been underway for quite a while. Why are we accepting this grant so late?
This is actually part of the project. It's for just rebuilding the dam part.
So have we not started that portion yet?
Oh, yeah. Well, no, they just got the permits, and I believe within the last week or two, from the Army Corps of Engineers to finish the bridge part of it. So, to answer your question, no, they haven't started the bridge part. The road, yes. The bridge, no. And they're two separate projects.
Looks pretty good in there, by the way. So. All right, I'm just curious. The timing seems odd because we've been at that project for a good part of the summer. So
it's been held up by the permitting process for the bridge portion.
Thank you.
Is there a motion?
I'll move to approve.
Second?
Second.
All right, further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. And are you going to do this naming rights for the dog?
Yes, sir.
Two? Okay.
We have an unnamed dog park in Old Settlers Park. It's one of three that are owned by the county. The dog parks can use only money that they generate through donations or contributions. Now, there's no levy money for these parks or for these dog parks at all. And we've conducted fundraisers in the past, and we use those expenses to cover any fees that we have. And for a donation of $12,500, the county will grant naming rights to an individual or organization that makes a donation. And the Harris family, Dr. William Harris, has donated the $12,500. And we would request that we can name this park the Harris Family Dog Park.
You put a sign on it like that then?
Yes. We'll put a sign.
Move to approve.
All right, sir. Second?
Second.
Further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Very good.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And now we have Human Services, a capital bonding change. And who's going to do that? All right.
There, we have these egress paths that we have had budgeted to have them brought up to compliance because they're asphalt and they're falling below the grade. And so when we had the contractor come out and we had bid documents and everybody looked at it. We have some things that we have to do to be ADA compliant, and that was not included in the budget. So I'm asking that $5,000 that we had carried over for several budgets be put into this project. It was for creating like an asphalt pad in the back so we had additional room for parking. But we've got pretty good parking now over at the old Brookside site. And the rest of the money we'd be able to take out of our maintenance accounts that we have sufficient funds for now.
Discussion. This is a budget change resolution, or
it doesn't
is that
go to the board. It's just finance committee, right, Al?
Correct. It's just a modification of capital every 4 years.
Right. So we approve it, and then it's approved.
Right.
Further discussion?
We'll make a motion to approve it.
Is there a second?
Second.
All right. Further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? That's it.
So, thank you.
The three economic support. Adelaide. All right.
Good evening. The resolution before you this evening is to add three economic support specialist positions within the Division of Workforce Development. And by way of background, some of you may remember that the state biennial budget last year under Act 32 required agencies, county agencies, to form multi-county consortia across the state. 10 were formed across the state. Kenosha and Racine entered into a partnership and formed the WKRP Consortium, which went into operation on January 2012, and it was previously approved in September 2011 by the county board. With Act 32, for the first time, it was required that consortia operate call centers and the state-run centralized service center was closed down as of April of 2012, and any cases that were being handled by the Enrollment Services Center were sent to the county of residence. Kenosha, as a result, received over 4,000 cases between January and July, 4,000 new cases that we did not have before. And, of course, this increased the workload for staff that were already handling multiple cases. We went from over 15,000 cases in January to over 19,000, nearly 20,000 cases by July. And we had the same staffing levels to handle this increased workload. In addition, with Act 32, there were new performance standards that the state required that had to do with response time for the call center, call center to answer within a certain period of time, as well as processing in a timely fashion. Or we might face penalties from the state, and at some point, if those penalties were severe enough, the state would take over the operation, and we would still have to pay into the operation of the call center. With the addition of the over 4,000 cases, the workload for the economic support staff has been tremendous. We have tried a number of different things. We've redeployed staff. We've changed our operation to try to manage the workload. And we've used overtime because, as I stated before, the workload has been tremendous. And we're just about out of our overtime budget, and the staff are conscientious enough that they are still staying over, coming early, working late, working through lunch hours, which we don't encourage them to do, but they do because they're trying to maintain the standards and stay on top of the workload. And so this resolution is asking for the addition of three economic support workers this year, effective September if it's approved, to help manage and stay on top of the added burden of cases that we received as a result of the Enrollment Services Center closing. The cost for the budget mod for this year would be approximately $50,000 from September through the end of the year to add the three positions. Half of that would be funded by income maintenance funds, and the other half would be funded by levy, which already exists within the DWD budget, and so there'd be no additional levy for adding these three additional positions.
All right. Questions? Discussion?
This was all done.
Right.
This was all done because the state passed Act
32,
and obviously they provided additional funds for us to have this extra work, right?
So young.
I asked that for a specific purpose.
Exactly.
I'm listening to this stuff about how they're saving money for us at the local level, and every time you turn around, they're sticking it to us.
That's right.
So, you know, balance your budget. Good job up in Madison, but not much help down here.
Yes, Mike.
Actually, do you have something here next?
I had gotten a call from one of the supervisors on the Human Services Committee today that indicated that you guys had debated or discussed it quite a lot. She had two concerns and some more information that came up. Is the call volume been consistently that high, like throughout the whole year? Has it just spiked now, or the, some information that indicated she had talked to people at the state that maybe the call line is spiking now, or you know that it may go down? Or has it been pretty steady?
The call volume is pretty steady, and the call volume goes up and down depending on what new initiatives the state puts out there. They just put a new initiative out there in July, whereby the poverty level was, I believe it was lowered for people receiving some types of medical assistance, and so in July the volume spiked up again. It just depends. We expect during certain periods of the month, well, certain times of the week, on Mondays, as an example, we receive about 1,500 calls on a Monday. Today is something that's called cutoff meeting. It's a deadline where we have to get our cases processed in order for people to get their benefits. And so next Monday, the calls will spike again. It just depends on the period of time. They taper off by Friday, but Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, the call volume is extremely high. So
maybe you could fill us in on if someone calls because they didn't get their benefits or something, or
they call for a variety of reasons. They can call because they didn't get their benefits. They could call because they have submitted an application and don't know the status of it. They can call because they submitted a change. They can call because somebody moved out of their house. They can call because they got a job, because they lost a job, because family members changed. They got married, they got divorced. Any variety of reasons that people are calling. And the wait time, depending on the volume, can be long. And so people sometimes hang up and call again because they think they can get through quicker the second time around, and it just adds to the volume when they do that. But the volume is tremendous, and you know, I've got some information here that I'm not really proud of, but I could share it with you in terms of, you know, some of the volume. In July, our consortium received 19,150 calls in the month of July. And the standard for the state is that we would answer these calls within 21 minutes, and that sounds very reasonable, except when you've got that many calls. People aren't calling all at once. However, you may have 100 calls waiting, you know, at one point in time. That's why people get impatient and decide to hang up and call back and try again to see if they can get in sooner. And we've adopted a model called Touch It Once, because we don't want people, we're trying to minimize the repetitive calls. And so whatever they're calling for, the workers try to address it right then and there. And it may be processing an application. It may be taking some information that will impact their case for the next month. And because they're handling it right then and there, the calls tend to take longer. So,
just out of curiosity, what's the poverty level now for a family of one?
For a family?
For a person, one person.
Oh, I don't remember. There's so many charts.
Well, they got a chart. You got 100%, you got 125%, you got
150%. Oh, are you talking just percentage?
Yeah, times? Yeah. Okay. No, I'm just talking about like what 100% of the poverty level right now for one person. It used to be 12 or 13,000. What is it?
And I'm going to venture a guess, because, like I said, Supervisor
okay.
Frederick, these things change all the time. For a family of one, I'm going to venture a guess, because it depends on whether it's a medical assistance program or a food share program,
oh, yeah, okay.
or a W-2 program.
Or
they're all different,
or
and that's why, if I were to guess, I would probably guess wrong. And I didn't bring that particular chart with me.
I was just curious.
Mark?
A couple questions. You have, we're talking about $50,000 for the last 4 months of the year, September through the end of the year.
Correct.
Which would be $150,000 a year.
Correct.
Come 2013 budget. Mm-hmm. So that's number one. You know, that's $150,000. It's three additional full-time employees.
Half of which would be funded, so it'd be $75,000 funded and $75,000 levy.
Yeah, and the question I have is, if this is a consortium, why is it our levy?
Because it'd be our workers.
Yeah.
We're adding our workers.
So all 1,900 19,100 and some odd calls were Kenosha County calls?
No, they were Kenosha and Racine calls.
There's my question again. Why is it, if these calls are coming from both, why is it we're funding 50% on our levy?
Okay.
So I don't like that.
And I'll answer that question this way. Racine has 43 FTE workers. So they have a bigger, and we have 33. We are severely understaffed. And so they are taking a bigger share of the calls because they have more people. And so we're trying to equalize the number of people that we have helping out with this. Through the state's own workload model, the state does periodic assessments in terms of how many people you need to handle the types of cases that we have. And through the state's own assessment, not that they're going to fund it, but they believe that Kenosha, in order to adequately manage the workload, needs, and I want to get the correct figure, that's why I'm looking here, I believe it's 47 workers by their own assessment would be what we need in order to manage this workload. In fact, the number specifically is 47.93 workers, which is like 48 workers. But of course, they're not going to fund that many workers. They recognize that we need higher levels of workers.
They're not funding the 33 that we currently have fully, are they?
Not fully, no. 50%. Half of it is through the maintenance funds, and the other half is through levy or something along those lines.
So
we have to levy match. Yes, we have to levy match.
What's the projection in the future? In other words, if we go, is it 33 we have currently?
33
so we'll be at 36. Ultimately, in a year, 2 years, these numbers come down to where it's manageable.
Mm-hmm.
I'd certainly like to see something in place that allows us to reduce that staff in the call center without having to go through, I guess, much effort to do it, so to speak. We're adding three employees at a time when budget after budget the last several years we've argued over a fractional FTE position. So this is a certain amount of heartburn. I understand you've got a workload, at least on paper the argument is there, that we should have additional staffing there. But I'm not inclined to add three staff that if things change 12 or 18 months from now, we don't have any way to reduce that staffing.
And if I could respond this way, in the 12 years that I've been in this position, and I've got stats, if you'd like to see them, the number of cases has never gone down. It's never gone down. It's always gone up. Not as significantly as it has this year. 4,800 cases in a six-month period is very significant. We've had a couple of hundred increase per month, every single month since the inception of these programs, or for the last 12 years. I can only speak for the last 12 years. So I would doubt, but I can't predict the future, that the numbers will go down. They might maintain, they might level out, but I don't think they will go down.
We have
If I could, this committee, I don't want you just to focus on the call center. These are three economic support specialists where maybe one's in the call center, two are going to be on the floor or out in the general reception processing cases. So these aren't specifically earmarked for just answering calls all day long saying, can I help you? So we're going to plug them in where the greatest needs are. And right now we do need at least one in the call center. And as we look at reorging and trying to catch up with these outcomes that we're so far behind on, we'll probably have a couple out front to help alleviate some of that pressure. So I didn't want to miss perception that we're just call center employees.
You said you have 25,000, but the current half of the $50,000 request here, 50 plus, is current levy money that you're going to reprogram.
Correct.
Why is that available?
Because in our budget projections for a particular service, which is the food share employment and training program, we are, I hate to say overfunded, but we've got some additional money that we can reallocate for this position.
We have some contracted services that are underspending this year, yet we didn't need all of that match on another 50-50 program, is what she's saying. So we're just going to use that match over to this side to fund the three accounts.
All right, and then finally, my inclination is to refer this back to the Human Services Committee, and the reason for that is because my understanding, and if it can be correct or confirmed here tonight that I'm incorrect, I can change that position. My understanding is there was some additional information or something that the committee has been made aware of that they believe that this should be discussed again. My understanding further is that the chairman of that committee has agreed to put this back on the agenda. And if that's the case, my recommendation is we refer it back to Human Services and give him the opportunity to do that.
Is that a motion?
Yeah. It will be in a moment. I'll allow a response. Not allow. I mean, if someone wants to respond to that, I'm okay with it. But sorry about that. That wasn't my point, but go ahead.
If I may, before the last, we had this in front of Human Service Committee, not last meeting, but the meeting before,
in July.
And at that time, Adeline did a much longer presentation for the group. Supervisor Decker came up to me at the last Human Service Committee last week and said she found out that she thought Adeline had mentioned that our phone technology was fairly advanced, and she had indicated when she called it she didn't think that to be the case. Had asked then at Human Service Committee that resolution be brought back forth for further discussion, and the chairman, Supervisor Hallman, said he'd take it under advisement. That's as much as I know. Whether or not he's made that decision since then, I don't know. But we talked to Supervisor Decker the next day after that meeting and explained the phone system to her, which was a little more advanced than what she had indicated to me the evening before. She thought by putting more information into the phone would help, maybe with technology, would help alleviate the need for employees. However, the bottom line is you still need employees to process the calls. I mean, it doesn't matter how many choices you give someone, eventually you have to talk to someone. We've all had those phone trees where you press one and two and state your name. And, you know, you can only get so far before you're sitting there still waiting for a human to get on the phone and say, can I help you and what do you need? So that was her concern. We talked to her, Adeline and I, at length on last Wednesday about that. She
seems satisfied at that point.
Yeah, and if there's been further discussions outside of that, I don't know about it, and I know Supervisor Hallman just said he was going to take it under advisement. I didn't see him, at least during that meeting, saying he wanted it brought back. So that's what I know on that.
Are you done, Mike?
Sure, for the time being.
I was at that particular meeting where this was vetted very well by Adeline Green and the rest of the staff. And as you notice here, the Human Service Committee passed it unanimously at that point in juncture. I'm happy to keep moving it forward here at this point. Thank you.
Ron?
I was going to say that maybe we can approve it, and then if the chairman of that committee has any second thoughts, he could pull it. He's the chairman of the committee. He could pull it. In the meantime, we move it on, and then if he wants to pull it, then he can pull it, I guess. If we're, you know, if there's more information to be had, at least we can get done with it here. And so I like to move that we move it on, you know, to the board, and then if the chairman of that committee wants to pull it, he can pull it. So I'll make a motion that we approve it on that condition, and obviously if it's okay, he won't do anything.
Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Further discussion? Adeline, is this being prompted by any kind of complaint or request from Racine?
No, it's not. It's being prompted by just the general workflow that is before us. We, as a management team, we look at the statistics every single day. This has added an additional monitoring piece for the supervisors. And the standards that I speak about, we every single day try to make sure that the cases are being processed in a timely fashion. We've color-coded things so that we know if we're on target, if we're close to the target, if we are not meeting the target at all. And so over the course of the last 6 months, as we've tried to redeploy staff here and there and change our operation, we have come to this conclusion. Racine hasn't really contributed to the conversation there. Of course, happy to have some more people that will help out in this situation, but we see the need for having some additional staff to help us out.
Are you meeting the goals of the state?
Not at this point in time, and I'm just going to show you. This is our color code document for the call center. This is our color code document for the ongoing work. Red is not good.
No.
Yellow is close, and green is good. And so after we get reports every single day on the statistics, and that's why how we know if we're failing in one area, then we send staff to handle cases in that particular area and try to bring the standards up. We get, in addition to the call center, we get hundreds, and I would venture to say thousands of documents online every single day, faxed in every single day, sent to the centralized data processing center every day. And the workers are simply just trying to stay on top and be within the time frames that the state has set. And so we have done our own assessment and determined that we need some additional bodies to try to stay on top of the work.
Mentioned by someone that next year's budget would be increased as a result of this resolution by $150,000. Is that just a guess, or is that something that is definite, or is it going to be more than $150,000?
Based on the budget mod for the last 4 months of the year, $50,000 times three would be $150,000 for the full year. And I emphasize again that half of it would be income maintenance and $75,000 of it would be levy. We are well aware of the 0% levy increase for 2013 and our fiscal team and us are meeting next week to see how we can stay within that levy limit and maintain these three positions. So
actually, it's $300,000.
No.
It's not the one fifty.
No, it's $50,000 for 4 months for three positions. $25,000 of which would be levy, and $25,000 of which would be income maintenance funds.
We had the biggest bogey in the 2012 budget was the income maintenance. So how do we know we're going to get $75,000 additional to cover these three positions in the income maintenance in 2013? How are we certain we're going to cover 50% of this?
We're not certain that of how we're going to cover it, but I'll say this. That I believe these three economic support positions are critical, and if we have to make some cuts other places in other types of positions, then that's how we're going to meet the levy limit.
And just to understand your resolution here more clearly, the resolution references the budget modification. If you don't get the revenue, you still maintain the positions?
We have the revenue. When you say if you don't get the revenue.
Oh, so you do have it.
Yes, yeah, we have it.
The income maintenance. Yeah.
I understand where it comes from.
Yeah.
But I guess the other part of my question then is, how do we know we're going to get the coverage next year? If income maintenance has been set for 2012, why do we have $25,000 of play in the current year income maintenance to cover half of this $50,000 right now?
Income maintenance is a federal drawdown, so whenever we match 50%, they will give us 50%. So
whatever.
There's no limit. Right, there's no specific
holy
limit.
Cow.
The issue with the
that's
income maintenance,
yeah,
the issue with the income maintenance money that you're referring to as far as part of the budget had to do with drawing down those dollars for folks outside of Adeline's economic support world when they were working with the same type of clients. So that was the issue we got hit with, the 1.5.
So that one was an issue. This one is just whatever we match, we'll get 50%.
Well, as long as the expenditures are appropriate for the federal drawdown, yes, they will match our thing.
Jeepers. And I guess the more we talk about this, and you understand, I'm not questioning the workload, mm-hmm. and I can take the need on face value. I'm not the expert, certainly. You are, and others in the room, but I also understand that we've got a mandate on the budget right now at 0%. We've had issues year after year after year in recent budgets with staffing and additional positions, et cetera. We're talking about, you're going to get together next week and start talking about what your 2013 budget is going to look like. Is there, I mean, I can make a pretty easy argument that this discussion ought to be held off until you have a better sense of how you're going to cover the additional $150,000 next year, or $75,000 on the levy, $75,000 from income maintenance maybe. And you know, so again, from that standpoint, I caught the tail end of the Human Services Committee. I'm going to say it here on the record again, Human Services, for the size of the budget, the complexity of the issues, should not be meeting on the night of a county board meeting. Mr. Chairman, I said that when I was chairman. I said it before that. I asked the question when I caught the end of it. You know, you're talking about a significant deficit that you're looking at for this year. I understand, you know, that it comes up. I asked if there had been any discussion about how you're going to tackle it. The answer was no, we hadn't. And as I asked the questions I asked, we're all looking at the clock because it's already 20 after 7 and the county board meeting starts in 10 minutes. I don't like it meeting on that night. It shouldn't, particularly when you're talking about significant issues. And now we're you know, coming forward with three additional positions, what sounds to me to be a week or two ahead of what is going to be the kickoff of your budget discussions. You know, again, I'm independent of what I heard about some thought process of bringing this back to the Human Services Committee, just on that fact alone, I'm inclined to refer it back to committee until you have a better sense of how you're going to cover this next year, because it could very well be that you don't have 50% match from income maintenance. Right? Is that what I'm hearing?
Only if the vets do something, and that has not been the pattern ever when it comes to this program. And that'd be completely out of the
way. We work on the 2013 budget starting in mid-May all the way through till when the county executive presents it in October. So we're still working on all of that.
And the budget that we had submitted, our tentative draft budget to Al and Dave, includes those positions while trying to reach that 0%. So we're well aware of what the county board resolution was on that. And we're certainly not a department that comes here often and asks for additional staff. I'm trying to remember the last time when it wasn't a grant employee that we put in. So we recognize this as a significant need. And the longer, if we get to the point where we get these staff on board, but the longer we draw that out, we're still being measured on these outcomes. And eventually, the state has already come down and said, you better get your act together on some of these real quick.
And there is a training time period, too, for economic support workers. 3 months? 4 months?
So it's about two.
It's about 60 days. So, you know, there's still a training issue that these people would not be fully on board until after.
The committee could change the resolution to add them for 2012 to review in the next budget so that it doesn't, it's not, the way it's drafted, it's automatic.
Well, and I raised that initially. If in fact, and I you're telling me that the trend has never been to go to lighten that workload, but I would so make that amendment that the resolution be modified to state that this is 2012 and that it be addressed fully in the 2013 budget.
Is there a second?
A second.
Discussion?
As long as we'll go along with this for the 3 months to finish the year, is that what we're saying?
Yes.
Yes.
Through the end of the year.
Yes.
To that end, you just said it takes 60 days to train somebody. You've got how many months left here in this year? You're going to train them, and then you're going to say, well, you're gone now. And where are we at?
Is that right? It's take 60. These people won't work. Is that true? They won't work for 60 days?
Well, they'll be working, but they'll be in training. We've got two workers just coming out of training now that started in mid-June. The programs are so complex, as I explained, that it takes approximately 60 days for them to learn the full impact of the programs.
You can take that approach. I won't support it. You can take that approach all day long. We can take that approach on everything that comes before the county board. And all we'll do is continue to spend money.
I'm not talking about that, Mark.
That's what it boils down to.
Now. Okay, what I was trying to say is we're going to train somebody for 60 days. They're going to work for 2 months, and then we're going to tell them to go home. We've allocated the resources into somebody for 4 months, three people. Tell them to go home. What do we get out of it? Just more people for, what, 2 months, two-month period? We still don't meet the standards that the state put on us.
Couldn't agree with you more. Then I won't support it at all.
You won't support it at all?
No,
you
no positions at all. Either through the end of the year with the caveat that it is addressed better in the 2013 budget or at least within the current parameters of the 2013 budget, or I won't support it. And the counter to your point, Ed, is simply this. Once you put it in place, this goes back to the change that took place under since I've been on the board, where all these grant positions would come forward. There would never be discussion about sunsetting the position. So you'd end up with a grant-funded position for a year, 2 years, 6 months, 18 months, whatever it would be. The grant would go away, and we'd be stuck with the position. So all I'm saying is I'm not in favor, and that was changed in relative recent times, to say when the grant leaves, so does the employee. All I'm saying right now is without a better understanding of how we fund another $150,000 plus, we don't know that for sure, and three additional full-time county employees, I want a better handle on it. So I don't think that's unrealistic, you know, because the next department who needs one employee or two employees or three employees, at some point in time, it just continues to add up. If your concern is that you know, it takes this training time, and if it doesn't work out in the 2013 budget, what did we get out of it? From my standpoint, what the taxpayers got out of it was a much better decision, because we're not strapped, for lack of a better word, with three additional full-time staff that we can't pay for. Simple as that.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I try to stay out of this as much as possible and let you guys have your discourse, but I was at that meeting, and I did hear the full presentation by Adelaide, and I think what you have to look at is right now, we're in a bad way. Okay, I do understand that we have the zero mandate, which I don't support, but, I mean, we have it. It's out there, and everybody knows. They're going to have to be under those budget constraints, and we're going to have the final say of what their budget is when it comes to us. But right now, we have 33 people in this program doing this job that Racine has 43, and by the state model, who granted has told us to do this without giving us full funding, which is very irritating, and a lot of our budget is that way, says we need 48. So right now, these people, and this wasn't brought up, but how long are people sitting on the phone now? Because I asked that question at the committee, and 21 is what they should be sitting on, and they're sitting on 40 minutes?
It ranges between, I would say, 25 and 45 minutes, and sometimes they're waiting over an hour.
Waiting over an hour to get help when they pick up the phone and call Kenosha County and expect like they have in the past. Now, granted, Act 10, Act 32, the governor's changes, a lot more is put on us without that money coming in. But they're really under the gun. I'm not here saying, hey, we got to start a hiring spree. I understand that we have to keep the budget within line, and they will do that. When they bring the 2013 budget to us, believe me, they're going to have it all thought out. And if they feel they need these positions, which I'm hearing they do, at the expense of others, then that's what they're going to do. But to send it back to the Human Services Committee, I don't think is a good idea at this point. I sat and listened to them, have it all vented out to them, plenty of good questions by the committee members at that committee. I've talked to Mr. Jansen. I've talked to some of the other supervisors, and I don't see anything that has been brought to light that's going to change any decision on the Human Services Committee. So what that'll do is delay us another month, month and a half, while these people are swamped, and the state's going to come down on us even harder. So I respect what you're saying. I understand that we don't want to just have positions out there that are going to continue to be a draw on our levy, even if it's only 50%. We have to all keep that in mind when we look at the budget in 2013. But right now, this is putting out a fire, and the fire's there. To send it back is not a good solution. You can do what you will with it. That's my two cents. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Dave? I'd like to be sure the committee understands that the resolution without the amendment affects only the 2012 budget. So when you're taking action on this, it will only affect the 2012 budget.
That's exactly
and
what
will not affect future budgets. So
that's redundant.
Right. I mean, you can make that amendment if you like, but this will expire at the end of the year, and it must be reintroduced and reapproved by the board to affect any future budget.
That was the point I was going to make. I said, I don't really know, because we're only going to fund it to the end of the year anyway. If the county executive wants to bring it in, he'll have those positions in there. So
I'll withdraw the amendment on that information.
Yeah.
Just want to add that we're at the Human Services Committee. We were told that the budget would not really change, or not 100%, but pretty much would not change for next year. This would not cost any additional money, or the money you guys would be able to find the money some other place, just the way you did it with 2012. But also, I was one that said that I would vote against it if any extra money is needed for 2013. And actually, after we voted, it was brought up that it takes about 2 to 3 months to train the people in, which at that point I said, had I known that, I would have voted against it, because it would be a waste of money just to spend the $50,000 for this year and maybe not being able to use them for next year. So that would be a concern of mine if we're just going to use it for this year, and then for 2013 we're going to have to take them off. We're just spending the $50,000 without benefiting anything. Unless we know for sure that it's not going to cost any extra levy money for 2013.
Well, you or Lori, are you committing yourself then that if we add this, we're really saying that we're going to include it in next year's budget? I mean, I think one has to make that concession if one is going to train them for 60 days. Are you saying that this extra money then will still be part of a zero increase in the overall budget? Or are you saying that, or you're not saying, you're not making that commitment? Because we can't, on the one hand, pass a resolution that says 0%, and then the next week come up with three new people.
You know, being August, it's very hard for me to tell you anything about 2013.
Okay.
I haven't vetted it with Dave and Al, our total budget. I haven't done it with the county exec. So why would I, you know what I'm saying? We have till October,
okay.
You know, to even go through.
We're approving it till the end of the year, and then the exec will bring his budget in with whatever he brings it in at, and then we'll have a kick at that, right?
Right. If you don't like it, then
yeah,
you
so
can
I think I heard Mark say he withdrew his motion on that basis, and so let's.
All right, we did pass the zero resolution.
Yeah. But the zero means that
it's countywide.
Come in countywide.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
true. But Mr. Chairman, that goes to my point about, and I understand, Lori, where you're coming from with the budget. I recognize that you aren't going to have your answer. It's not due until October, et cetera. But you've been at this a very long time, and you're very good at what you do. That's the discussion. This is the type of discussion that ought to be taking place when the request is made. Not saying, with all due respect, we'll wait for the executive to bring forward his budget, and then we'll.
No, I'm saying, Mark, is that he'll bring in his budget, and then we'll take a look at it, right?
And I understand that, but being a little bit more proactive about it is all I'm asking for, instead of, you know, bringing the stuff forward and saying, you know, on one hand, you said you've been working on the budget since May, and on the other hand, you're saying, well, I can't really tell you until October.
Well,
you know,
I don't know if this will make you feel any better since I do such a wonderful job for you, Mark. But the thing is that when this all, I mean, we obviously talked about this through with the whole department before we even brought anything forward.
Sure.
And the reason it was kind of high on my priority list that, yes, okay, I'm approving this, yes, we'll search for this funding, we can do it this way, is because we're in this consortium. We have an agreement with the state. And it's my understanding that if we don't meet these standards, we're going to get A, a corrective action plan, B, probably a penalty. I mean, it'll just keep going down the road, and then it'll get pulled from us, and then the state will come in and run it. And I'm not so sure.
I'm sure that'll go well.
Yeah. which was my words exactly.
The state will come in and run it?
That was my words exactly.
We just won't pay
them. And they'll take our money, and they'll take what we have put in, they'll take our levy anyways, and they'll run it. So that's why we want to make sure that we succeed at this. And given the numbers with what Adeline has researched and statistics, I mean, I think this is a high priority for us in this situation.
Well, it's clear, Mr. Chairman, the challenge is before them, and your point is right on. Right? If they put the three positions in the 2012 budget, they know what has to come forward for the 2013 budget, which is a zero. The assumption is that these positions are going to be in there. We're not certainly carving out a zero budget except for these three positions. So your what's before you is obviously formidable, and I suspect you're, regardless of what we're saying or hearing tonight, that you've been having those conversations, you'll continue to have those conversations.
Absolutely. And, you know, you'll see it in the budget presentation how we're funding it. I mean, obviously, any 2012 resolutions that get put forth during the year after the adoption of that budget is an add-on in my presentations. So, you know, it'll show the lines item that this was added to the 2012 resolution. So you'll see it. I mean, it's not like we're gonna, but it's a high priority for Adelaide and the division. And actually the constituents, all of your constituents, there is a lot of people.
Well, to your point, it did help a little bit.
Did it? Okay.
Yeah. I appreciate the job that you do every day, believe me. I do. I know what you go through.
It takes a team, and John's got a good team.
Aaron, would it be, my concerns are very similar to yours, would it be detrimental to run this on overtime until we get to the budget discussions? You know,
we've run out of overtime. We offered the last overtime this month, and we're done with overtime. So we've been doing that, and that's why I say staff. In addition,
I'm just wondering if you could keep doing that until we get to the budget to you know, make sure that we've got the funds to cover it in the total human services area. You know, I mean, I don't doubt that the need is there. Like you said,
I mean, I'm a little troubled though that I don't get a commitment that the zero resolution is going to be complied with. I don't want to one week pass it and then the next week disregard it. I mean, if I had a commitment from you that was the way you were going to comply with the zero in presentation, I realize we can do whatever cutting we want. You know, I would certainly feel more comfortable supporting this.
But aren't we at a point where the exec's going to come in with a budget for the whole county? And then obviously his target is zero. So I don't know.
Well, I know, but that means somebody else.
I don't know if every department can come in with zero. Maybe some will take cuts, and maybe some will have to put a little bit more in it. I mean, I don't think they love coming here to ask for this tonight. I'm sure I can feel that, Eugene. So I think I'm ready to vote on it. So
yeah, I'm just going to say one thing. I can appreciate the questioning of every FTE hired. Okay, and you guys are diving in and you're asking exactly the right questions. But this is a ticking time bomb. If we don't comply with this, and we start getting state people down here to run it and having to pay for it anyway, it's going to turn into a disaster. And the Human Services Committee vetted that, and that's why they voted unanimously that way. I mean, I understand, you know, the 2013 budget, the exec knows we came in with a zero, he came in with a zero. Was, you know, you can't ask them to put out fires that they don't know that are there yet. now. We got to put out the fires that are here. And the minutes that it's taken to answer these calls, the number of people doing it, the state getting in our grill is a problem. And it's going to continue to grow. I understand watching every penny and being fiscally responsible. That's what we do. But this is one where we need to trust the experts on it. And then we can make sure that it comes in the way we want next year. So that's all I can say.
And if they come in, they will get their money because they'll just dock our pay, that's all.
Well, do you have some letters from the state being critical of the administration of the program?
No, they just have paid us 2 visits and made some recommendations to us as to how we need to redeploy staff, try this, try that, and we've tried the various things that they have told us.
I see.
We do have a last listing they put out of the 10 consortiums, and ours was on the bottom as far as median outcomes. We were the worst consortium in the state.
Is that because we have the most demand?
Yeah, we've got the most urban area, and our folks tend to be transient, have lots of troubles. They tend to repeat calls because they're not getting what they want. So, yeah, I think this Kenosha we're seeing has probably the most challenging clientele in that regard. Most of the other
consortiums. What do you mean they're most transient?
They're moving in, they're moving out. They don't have money. They move in with this person. They move out. They move back.
You mean out of the community?
No, they're moving in and out with different people. Sometimes they move out of the community. Yes, sometimes they do. But that's what I mean. They're changing households. They're changing boyfriends. They're having babies. They're doing all sorts of things. It's just the population that we deal with in the Kenosha Racine area.
A further discussion? Ready to vote?
I'll make a motion to approve it.
I think it's already
there is a motion on the board.
Yeah,
all right, you want to take your roll?
Roll call.
Aye. Did you say yes?
Yes, I yes. Okay.
Aye.
Karen?
Aye.
Mark?
Aye.
Aye.
Passes unanimously.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for all your hard work.
Long way around the horn.
All right, let's move on to the next item of business. The that would be item number 12. The nursing
Well,
next.
Proctologist. The fire's going under that seat.
Is that seat out over okay.
Yeah, that's
my life. We have a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week operation, and I'm talking about nurses right now. On second shift, we staff with 6 nurses. We have 2 units, so there's 4 on one unit, 2 on the other. On third shift, we staff with 4 nurses, 2 and 2. And this has been going on, I have no idea, way before my time. That's how many nurses it takes to take care of 154 patients. So I asked the question one day, why do we always have so many holes in the schedule? So I took our approved FTEs and I put them on a schedule and found out that we don't have enough FTEs to staff with 4 nurses on night shift and 6 nurses on second shift. Now we actually staff that way. We always have 4 nurses on nights and 6 nurses on the second shift. But we don't have enough FTEs to actually do that. We were 1 day short on second shift, 8 hours, and 3 days short on third shift. So that means in order to get 4 nurses, we have to ask somebody else to come in extra or ask overtime or have a pool agency come in, which is even more expensive. So my ask, what I'm asking for is that we increase the budget by 0.8 FTEs, so we actually have the real amount of people, FTEs, so that we can staff those numbers, which we already staff. There's no change in the budget because we already do it that way. It's just that somebody will actually have to be assigned those hours rather than asking people to come in. Point 0.8, that's it.
All right, discussion?
My math is correct, Mr. Chairman. That makes 3.8 for the evening.
Better engineer.
The question I have, it just...
All for free.
Seems... Not all for free. Not all for free. Why was this not brought forward with the health insurance issue? The health insurance for the part-time employees. Timing just seems a little, at least enough to ask a question. Here we're arguing about, or not arguing, we had the discussion last meeting about providing health insurance for part-time nurses.
Well,
And I'm assuming you were staffing this 0.8 position that you are now looking to fill with, maybe I'm incorrect, but some of those part-time nurses positions, or no?
Overtime.
Overtime, I mean, it's, you know, truly really all the same.
A variety of benefits to staff.
So inclusive of some of these part-time employees who are now entitled to county health insurance.
They were always entitled to county health insurance. They're just not entitled to as much of it as they used to be. County health insurance was a reduction. And it is not affected by whether or not, not affected anymore at least, by whether or not an employee works and compensates for the 0.8 shortage. That's no longer an issue because, as you know, the reduction indicates that the benefit matches the posting. Okay? So if you pick up extra hours, it does not increase the benefit. And this is something that will really make things much better for us and probably more cost-effective in the long run for the operation of the nursing home and the amount we're paying them.
And to answer your question, this has to do with RNs and LPNs, and the other one just has to do
just
with RNs. And to tell you the truth, I don't know. I can't remember the timing. I've been to the Board of Trustees. I've been to Human Services. And we actually talked about, we were kicking it around if it had to be a resolution or if it could be some other method. And this is what we ended up saying it had to be. So I don't know if I knew it at that time. You know, I just kind of was scratching my head one day trying to figure out why we never had enough people to plug into that schedule and sat down and took a pencil out and figured it out.
What impact will this have on next year's budget?
Zero.
Why is that?
Because we're already staffing that. We already have 4 nurses on night shift and 6 nurses on second shift. It's just that they didn't have enough FTEs to actually do that. So we had to either have someone extra come in or work overtime, which is more expensive, or have a pool nurse, which is even more expensive. So
does this result then in the reduction in the overtime budget or the temporary help budget?
It's a wash, right?
It's a wash. This was an FTE function as opposed to a funding function.
It's just a budget.
It's
really helps.
Staffing.
Just a housekeeping thing to get the FTE count right. Legal counsel says our FTE count has to be approved by the board, so it doesn't affect dollars.
And no, we're not changing the budget for overtime work or pool health because we have no way of determining. I mean, maybe it's 3 pool health nurses. So far, we've had to call in. I mean, I'd have to go back to January and figure that out of last year.
All right, further discussion? Is there a second?
Second.
Further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
you.
Thank you.
All right, the next item is the Human Services second quarter update.
Why, so you can get out the door.
No, I love coming here.
So she can run away.
Yeah, we have a little bit of a blip on second quarter for human services. And keep in mind that this report reflects the worst case scenario. And through June 30th, we've had some increase in admissions for adults in institutes and hospitals. And we've had some increases in juvenile placements a little bit, and the medical examiner. Those are the three areas that I want to focus on tonight. So yes, the total down below is about $595,000 that we would be short if we took exactly what happened in the second quarter and straight-lined it all the way to the end. So this is the worst case scenario. Keep in mind though, even the $595,000 that we'd be short, we're able, Brookside is coming in through June 30th at about $185,000 to the good, so through the first 6 months. So that can be applied against this. We are able to draw down through our state and federal funding sources for more indirect costs for the county. So part of that, again, goes towards covering this $595,000. And then we have some health insurance savings that we believe might come through by the end of the year. So this might be really close. Between those three areas, we might be really close at this point to June 30th of being a zero. But let me talk about DADS first, okay, the Division of Aging and Disability Services, and that's on page 2 and 3. If you look on the charts on page 3, it's this chart. You'll see the line charts. You'll see that the state institutes have spiked in May and June for admissions. These are emergency detentions. These are court-ordered admissions. So in May, we had, in April, we had like 5, and in May and June, they jumped up to 12 and 13. And the hospital admissions, again, went from 17 in March, and then April, May, and June spiked again. And we're seeing July pretty much on track of May and June. So we did not see that go down in July at all. The one saving grace is that the care center down below, we're also using them. And they are at, we had them at 63 for April, 58 for May, and 58 again for June. And it's not just repeats, we're seeing new admissions in the last quarter. Some of it, if I go back to page 2, with just our numbers listed, you can see that state institutes are approximately going to be over if we just use the first 6 months of data of 153,000. The hospitals and inpatient, about 256. So total inpatient services, about 360,000. And residential, we're doing okay with the 231, but pharmacy is also going up. So our days of care and the number of admissions are increasing in state institutes and hospitals. Pharmacy, it's the number of people served. We had budgeted probably about 205. And through June 30th, we're about on average 259. So that's like 50 more people that we're serving, that we're covering their pharmacy costs. And in the blue box over there, I've given you a two-year comparison. So you can see that in 2012, we're definitely spiked up. A couple of reasons is there's been some Medicaid changes at the state level. You heard it when Annie was talking about some of the poverty levels have been decreased for applications for some of the programs. And Badger Care, which is the single adult Medicaid to help out with that, they have capped, and they started a waiting list. They've capped the enrollment and started a waiting list. So what happens is that these people are now coming to our door. And if the pharmacy, keeping those on their right prescriptions, is keeping them at home, at an even keel rather than having these emergency detentions in hospitals. I also, on page 4, has a chart on the number of admissions, and these are the more colored charts. And so for the number of admissions or emergency detentions, you can see from 2012 projected, 2011 and 2010. So the blue is our institutes, and we're projected in 2012 to have number of admissions of 196, and where we only had 64 the year before. For the red, which is our hospitals, projected 492, when we had 188 all year. So you can see, but the green is the number of admissions for the care center, which is our less expensive setting, and also works with them to keep them out of the hospitals and the state institutes. And we are utilizing them more. The days of care, however, are going up. And you can see that's in the right chart. So with the number of admissions, obviously, we're going to have an increasing number of days of care. And then on the bottom tells the good story is that our average length of stay, however, is either at or below the level of the previous year. It's just that we have an increased number of admissions. So that means more days of care. For Brookside, I've given you the 630 2012 report, and we are at about $185,000 profit-wise through June 30th. And on page 7, it talks about our census. And on the bottom of the page where private pay was, we budgeted 29, and the average year-to-date through June 30th is 29.3. So we're 0.3 over on the private pay, and that's the census that we break even on costs. For Medicare, we had a budget of 29.5, and we are at 31.8. So we are over 2.3 beds a day on Medicare. And remember, Medicare brings in approximately $137 more to help offset the bottom line costs. So that is a good thing to be over on that. And Medicaid, we lose approximately $120 a day on a Medicaid resident, and we are below budget, so that's good, about 3.8 beds. So overall, we're at a 99.2% budgeted days occupied, which is very good. I don't know if any of you are familiar with the other nursing homes in town, but their vacancy rate is very high. So we are at 99.2%. And then for juvenile placements, we're averaging, we're thinking of maybe about $187,000 over in our placement costs. Again, these are all court-ordered placements, juvenile placements. And most of it's coming from just two individuals that have a longer length of stay, two children that have longer stay with some serious mental health issues, so in the institutes. But we're working between dads and juvenile placements. We constantly, daily work to monitor to get these people in the appropriate setting, but maybe in a less, more expensive setting. The last one I want to talk about is the medical examiner, and I haven't really come with anybody. Oh, I wanted to show you this chart too for juvenile placements. I'm sorry, it was an add-on. So this is kind of giving you a comparison from 2005 down, and the blue is what actually is our budgeted amounts, and the red is the actual amounts that we've ended each year with. So as you can see, we've been decreasing on actual, so we kind of got the budget down there. We finally got the budget down. And it's even before, our 2012 budget is even before more than our 2011 actuals, but we're spiking in that second quarter. So, you know, it's hard to guess on this, but we use historical data and current as much information as we have when we do a new budget. For the medical examiner, however, we are, that's on pages 9 and 10. This is a lot of data on page 9. For the medical examiner, but what I want to give you is a little overview of what we're showing you. It's a 2010 full year, 2011, these are just autopsies. Now these are statute autopsies, autopsies that we must do by state statute. So 2010 autopsy statistics, 2011 full year autopsy statistics, and then 2012 through July 31st. That's the latest data that we have, just through July 31st. In the gray areas where it says accidental death, homicides, natural deaths, that's our manner of death. And under each one of those is the cause of death. So just for example, what we're seeing a spike this year is if you look under accidental deaths, which is the first gray area, and you look under toxicity, the drug and overdose, now these are accidental drug and overdose. We had a total of 29 the whole year for 2010, 23 all of last year, and through July 31st, we're at 30. We're already at 30. If you go to the next section on homicides, the total number of homicides in 2010 was 2. We had none in 2011. We had 4 already through July 31st this year. I mean, you can read the paper, you hear it. You know, we've had a lot of deaths listed. And then our natural deaths are up, and suicides. We had 26 in 2010, 23 in 2011, and already 13 through July 31st. We've also seen a lot of number of indigent deaths where there's no family associated or claiming body where our fees aren't collected for that one. But for total number of autopsies, for 2010, we had 180 autopsies. Last year, we did 119. We are already 105 through July 31st. We have budgeted 106 for the whole year. So that is why we're showing an $80,000 straight line death from what I've taken through July 31st and take it all the way out through December 31st. That's our worst case scenario, about $80,000 for autopsy. The good news is that we transport our bodies to Milwaukee County now because there is no doctor here in Washington County. So they do the autopsies. They did it for $1,200 in 2010. They're doing it for $1,200 in 2011, and they're doing it $1,200 per autopsy for 2012. And we found out that they're going to keep that right for 2013. So we're really excited about that. So that's kind of
overcharges.
Yeah, that's a blood death. If I can straight line death, I'm getting good at that. So that's just our information.
All right, thank you for the discussion.
Just one quick question here. 2010, I see that, like you said, 180, and 2011, 119. Were you seeing a downward trend? Is that why we went to just 106 for this year?
Well, keep in mind that when we did the budget for 2012, it was September's numbers. And we did have some more,
forget the
more
question.
At the end.
No, you're right. I missed that. Thank you.
I know. I never get a true year.
You mentioned something about indirect costs. What is that?
Indirect costs. What happens is, I don't know if you guys want to say. I don't want to take their thunder away from
me. Nelson's going to take my.
We have personnel, like Bob Riedel. We have personnel.
And
we have IT, that type of thing. And we get allocated a certain amount, based on different types of allocations. So all of those indirect costs, we get an allocation for us. And if we can draw down federal and state, funds, we will do that. Well, this year, what we budgeted and what we could do. What we could actually draw down when we estimated it is more. It's about 100 plus more.
Okay. Thank you.
That was
all right. Further discussion, Eric.
Just on the occupancy, you said the 99.2. There's other in the area higher vacancy rates. What do you attribute that to? That works so well.
Oh, she left. Oh, I was going to have her do her thunder. Okay. We are the nursing home of choice in Kenosha County. Yes, we are the nursing home of choice.
And just like the golf courses, every other private nursing home thinks they can run Brookside better.
Really?
Oh, I hear it all the time. Yet they have vacancies.
I was going to say, did you ask them what their vacancies are?
Exactly.
All right, anything further on this item? Seeing none, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, let's move on to the honor the bill that's taking place. You can help us circulate out. All right, and we'll go into the report from the finance director and budget manager and personnel director. Dave, do you want to start off?
We'll have the budget director present the forecast, the 2012 forecast.
All right.
This is the first shot you guys are getting the opportunity to look at our general fund forecast. And it's real casting down. This is the first look at it for 2012. Early in the year I start doing a expected and a negative on the general fund forecast. And right now the things that are running positive. Okay. They're running positive. That look like the increase in general fund is health insurance is running an $800,000 surplus. And I'm not going to go through the negative side of it, but the more conservative estimate would be the negative forecast, but I'll go through the expected. Sales tax is up about $250,000. Lori had mentioned the indirect cost revenue and then the Brookside surplus. So those things are would increase the general fund. The things that are having... The other thing is we always budget $50,000, so I'm anticipating that we'll continue to use $50,000 in the 2013 budget, and that will draw in the general fund. The negative things that are affecting the fund balance would be the sheriff's revenue. Right now they have a reduction in the number of prisoners they're housing. The human services deficit, that's the report Lori just went through, is $595,000. Vacancy adjustment is $300,000. And tax delinquencies at $200,000. That would basically put us at a negative, maybe $250,000, but at this point in the year, it's basically a wash of where we are in the general fund. The worst case scenario, and this is very similar to the worst case scenario, the negative scenario, is the first report I gave last year said that the general fund could be as low as $6 million. So this report is not a lot different than what we saw last year at this point.
Now, why is there a reduction in the federal inmate revenue?
Right now, we don't have the inmates that we forecasted.
Why is that?
We're just not getting.
Want me to take it?
You want to take it? You met with the sheriff.
The meeting with the sheriff. There's some different reason, but the overarching reason is that they have advanced their medical requirements beyond what they were in the past. And the federal government, they want us to have a lot of doctors and nurses and dental and all sorts of, on staff 24/7 and all this stuff. And so because we don't have that, they pulled some of their inmates out.
How many?
We went from, we had an average of 267 last year, and we're about 190-210, between 190 and 210 this year. So let's say about... Would you say about 50 if you looked at last year's average?
Right, they're down about 250. I mean, not 250, they're down about 50. I think they were 267, and they're running about 237 total between vice and federal inmates.
Do we then consider laying off people?
Well, we're currently not filling vacancies over there. We're trying to consolidate. They're working on a plan. I mean, they definitely are working on a plan. I know we have not filled, and I think Bob can attest to it. We have probably 6 or 8 correctional officer positions.
How many?
10.
Okay.
Better make it. I mean, that's a big number of $500,000 difference.
We're also working with the feds on increasing our rate. We're doing, the sheriff's department is doing a lot, and we'll have more information as we go forward next month and as we get into the budget on how we're working through this.
Because it would seem to me that if that's going to be the trend, the average, and it sounds like it based upon a standard of medical care, that we don't need as many employees over there.
But if we were to get a rate increase and do some of the other things, we would be able to use some of that rate increase to offset some of the additional expenditures and still be able to balance this out. If we do not, they're working through a plan to reduce the number of staffing, consolidate some of where they house their prisoners and how they classify them and move them around.
So it's the rate increase.
It's real early at this particular point. I know earlier in the year they had talked to me. They had a $300,000 deficit that they thought they would be able to cover in-house by not filling positions and eliminating overtime and doing some other things. This is the
in the last month has become a bigger number because they basically, the vice told them they weren't going to increase the number and hold them at a lower number of inmates. So they are working. We'll bring in new information next month when we go through the general fund report, or if we have, you know, and bring a more detailed report to you. But this is pretty fairly, this is fairly recent news in the last week on, and how they're going to, what action to put.
My recall is it's from 70 to 105, but just for the vice.
Yeah.
That's the only, you know, that's the only one that will give them that one.
Well, they're actually deporting more people now, too. I think that probably that number is going down because the feds are deporting more illegal immigrants.
Well, it's
yeah, that's just high, it's been
they're
high.
Not deporting more. There's not, there's less coming in and there's less going out.
Because they're not.
Well, our people are ones that have been adjudicated. They've been adjudicated.
Okay.
However, they will be sent out. They're being held and detained until being sent out of the country.
Yeah, the initial number they thought they would be able to, last month when I talked to them, they thought they'd be able to cover the shortfall that they were getting, and they were hoping their numbers would come back up. This was new information that came to light last week that they that the vice are holding their numbers constant at a lower number until they can meet higher standards. And we're trying to work with the Sheriff's Department to determine a rate and determine a rate to see if we can get a rate increase from the feds or willing to look at that rate increase and go forward from there. But we're monitoring this very closely. I mean, it's new information, and hopefully we'll bring you more information in the next finance report.
I understand you got some new information tonight or that came up in the last couple of weeks, but the fact that the numbers have been down is not new.
No.
They've been down all year.
No, they've been down.
So I'm a little surprised that it's August 16th.
But they were going to be able to, I think we mentioned that they were going to be able to cover those numbers internally.
But that's still good information to have, an understanding of, you know, we've got 10 vacant positions. I didn't think we had 10 openings over there in the Sheriff's Department. Who's the chairman of Judiciary and Law?
Danny Esposito.
Okay, I mean, again, that's good. Sure, but that's all good information to report to the county board, and certainly I think the Finance Committee ought to be as engaged in understanding where that's going and where they've been. And, you know, if Supervisor Esposito isn't going to share that through his committee, then certainly I think these reports need to be part of our regular meeting here in some way or another. I mean, you're talking about a $500,000 deficit because the number of inmates are down, and to hear that on August 16th is awfully late, particularly when you say you've got new information that came out this week. Well, geez, where have we been, or what was the plan up until then?
You said the plan at that time they were hoping that the numbers would come up. They were covering it within their budget. They thought any shortfall that they would have, they would be able to.
See, that gives me just as much heartburn, though. How do you cover $500,000 in your budget if you're not over budgeted to begin with?
Well, I think there's a lot of things, not filling positions in their particular case.
And, you know, I say that I get excited, make the statement, and I know all of the potentials that are there. But
I think every department
tries
to manage to the bottom line.
Yeah, we should have heard this much sooner than tonight, though, is all, I guess, is the bottom line of my point. And if that information isn't getting out, then I think it's incumbent upon staff to get that to the Finance Committee.
This is the first time we bring the general fund report forward.
Okay. Thank you.
We weren't aware that this was happening. You're looking at $1 million the way it looks.
Well, I mean, we're well over $1 million projected at this point in two departments.
Yeah.
Human Services in the jail, the two biggest departments, or budget departments in the whole.
Yeah, it's real hard up until mid-year to get a real handle.
Yeah, but it's not hard. To know that your inmate numbers are down. I mean, he gets that report monthly, if not daily.
I mean, you said it was from 230 something down to what?
267 to 197.
My recall is it went from the 267 average last year. Of course, we're budgeted less than that.
Yeah.
We're budgeted 250. So that's the number we've got to make budget. That it had been, it's actually down. Now that the average isn't 200. The average is higher than 200
right.
Because it was higher earlier in the year. but it's now dropped down to a 200 number, and there were days it dropped below 200.
And that's strictly for by 20% drop in inmates.
Yeah, well,
we weren't aware of anything.
They're pulling people out for the reason I said, but I think the annual average is higher than that, but if it stays as low as it is, you know, 190, 200, then that annual average will drop quickly, you know, away from the 250 that we needed to be.
Yeah, until a month ago, it was much less of a problem overall.
And?
Yes, and Mr. Grisling mentioned earlier that we did lose some of these inmates due to the fact that we don't have the proper medical attention on staff there.
Well,
24/7.
I wouldn't characterize it as not having the proper medical. We haven't had a medical incident there, and they get good medical care.
Right.
But they've elevated the standards significantly.
They get great medical care.
They want a doctor available.
But they get your 24/7.
I mean, not on staff, but somebody. We don't have somebody available.
They have a doctor available 24/7, but it might be on staff. I mean, I could be misspeaking, but they're demanding more medical resources to be poured into it. And you know, like I say, we haven't had a medical incident. They're getting good care. Whenever they need something, they get it. But
I'd be interested to know what these standards are, because this is a large number. Maybe we should have the sheriff or chief deputy report, because I can't imagine that jails have medical doctors on staff.
I don't think it was doctors. I thought it was we don't have full complement of nurse or nurse practitioners and the number of doctor hours available.
Well, somebody gets sick.
Yeah, but not full, not at the level. The way I understood it from the sheriff is that the federal government has raised their standards, and we don't meet those standards. Specifically, what those standards are,
he
I can't tell you.
Us, but I mean, anytime 24/7, they need medical care. If there's an emergency, or you know, they get it.
Sure. Well, maybe we should have the chief deputy come here.
I'm not questioning that we're not giving our inmates proper care. My question, I think, more so relies on how do we gain these numbers that have been taken away from us?
Yeah.
And is that cost offset by hiring another nurse or whatever is going to make up the difference?
The way we do
it. This is fairly new information. Let me have the sheriff.
No problem. I think we're just betting it here just to get it.
But the way we do it is we increase the rate that gives us the funding to hire the medical care. Then the numbers go up, and then you know now our numbers are back up, our revenue's back up. We will have some increased cost to meet these medical requirements.
But I think the committee still would be interested in knowing, this be August, what is being done about the projected deficit. This is a December 31st number, which I assume makes the assumption that everybody's working and nothing's changing.
That's not the case. They reported that they're trying to minimize it as much as possible.
That's
what we'd like to know.
Yeah, that would be a good report, but we've had discussions with them. They're making, Al walked you through lots of them. They're making significant efforts to reduce their budget, and they are reducing their spending. And if they hadn't done that number would be double, triple what it is. So they're taking big efforts to balance their budget. It's just that the numbers have declined on the revenue side, you know, for the reason that I said.
Well, I think we are reacting to the $1 million deficit and query what's being done about it.
Yeah. I think your desire is to get a report, and I think that would be good.
Okay. Why don't you put that on the next agenda?
And if I may, this is also part of my point. I brought it up a couple of times tonight as we go through these different discussions and budget modifications. Now more than ever, leading up to the 2013 budget, with the makeup and inexperience with the budget process that we currently now have on the county board, the more we can get this information out and understood early, the better off and easier that process will be for all involved. And I'm not just talking about the county board, I'm talking about staff as well. And if you haven't seen it already in some of the questions that are asked and what's been brought up, you might want to start paying attention, you know, because I think it's going to be, the potential is there for this to be one hell of a struggle to get through this budget process. And if we have issues like this that, you know, we're bring it up at the last minute or late in the game without much information, boy, it'll be an awful long pull to get through it.
I see your vacancy adjustment is you figure that, in other words, there are not as many vacant positions, obviously, as there have been.
Well, it's kind of twofold. For a while there, we've been hit on the vacancy adjustment because of the economy. People were not turning over in positions.
Yeah, right.
Now I'm getting some turnover because of retirements, but what I don't have is I don't have a double up of health insurance for people that are leaving and new people that are coming in. Okay, and I'm getting so many.
Say that again.
I'm getting a double up. If somebody leaves, and they're 60 years old,
oh, they get their insurance. Yeah, I got you.
60
to
65. I have a new person coming in.
I got.
I have an over amount of those types of situations that are going on. The normal vacancy.
Because they get their
full
health insurance until they're 65. Yeah. Or not,
normally, I had a certain amount, a constant amount of people that would come and go, and it wouldn't be a big deal.
So you're projecting. What did you budget for that vacant? What did you budget for?
$1.2 million for countywide.
Budget $1.2 million.
Yeah, it's typically around two.
So it's
going to
be $600,000 minus by that. So you're going to actually have a plus, but it's not going to be as high as you thought it would be, right?
No, this is going to be below that. I'm not going to hit $1.2 million.
You had $1.2 million, but you're only going to get half of it. Half
right.
Of that. Yeah. Okay.
All right, further discussion here? Did you have something, Jeff?
Yeah, through the chair to Al. So is that $600,000? Is there any way? I was meeting with Bernie, and I didn't hear the beginning of the conversation. Is there some plan out there to reduce that $600,000, or other than trying to get more inmates?
No, this on vacancy adjustment, that's just a matter of that staff.
That's people you don't hire.
I understand that. Yeah. I'm looking, I guess the hole that was presented at their committee meeting, which I was at, was like $600,000.
Okay.
And when I asked for, is there some type of plan that can reduce that, the only thing I got was, we're going to try to get more inmates. I mean,
we're going to have, and you weren't in the room, we're going to have the chief deputy come in next week or somebody from the sheriff's department representing, give us the full details on why the number of inmates are down and what the plan is to reduce the deficit.
Okay. All right. Anything further on the reports?
No?
Okay.
Report.
Dave, you?
Do we have a list of anything out to mention on any of the other ones? Register of Deeds or anything?
Register of Deeds is the only other report in the file. It's a June report.
All right.
No, I don't.
Bob, do you have anything?
No, I don't have anything.
All right. That concludes the formal business in public session. The next item is the closed session. And the Corporation Counsel is here to discuss the Health Department litigation, and probably read about it in the newspaper. So, and that would be to include staff and county board supervisors. We'll do a roll call on that. Who seconded it?
Oh, second.
All right. Ed, yes or no?
Yes.
Yes. All right. Aaron?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. All right. We are now in closed session.
Can we get a minute to change?
Yeah.